This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And
they want to
see me pick back up. And it's extra. We all are fired. Now I got it like that. Tuck my napkin in.
Place to Be Nation proudly presents Clotheslines and Headlines. This is episode 20, the Barry Sanders episode, or the Gary Payton episode for all of our listeners out in the Pacific Northwest. I am your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, but this is not a one-man show. This is not a one-man operation. Much like Impact Wrestling, we are striving to make podcasts great again, and so I need a team around me, and of course that team includes none other than the one and only Steve Willey. Brother Willey, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm fighting a cold here, so if I sound strange to the listeners, that is why. And I also promise if you don't listen to the show, I will not sue you if you decide to take your podcasting listing elsewhere. I'll be sad, but I won't sue you.
And since all great things come in threes, you know, you can't have Huey and Dewey without Louie. You can't have whatever the hell the Three Musketeers names are without the other two Musketeers. We have our third man in the booth with us tonight. I guess you could say he's the Mark Madden of the show. You know him. You love him. You can't get enough of him. Ladies and gentlemen, the infamous Glenn Butler. Brother Glenn, how are you feeling, my man?
Thanks a lot for that glowing introduction, Nate. I am feeling a little irate because I have seen a lot of negative messaging on the Tweety lately about owls. And I went to Southern Connecticut State, which is the home of the owls, and so I feel a little protective.
Hashtag save the owls. Is that where you're trying to lead us this week, Glenn?
Precisely, my brother.
Yes, I think I can speak for all host in attendance. We are pro owls in terms of the living, breathing creature. When it comes to the mascot for Impact Wrestling, that might be another fish altogether, Brother Willie.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to, let's just say screw the owl, but it's an interesting logo though, isn't it? It's like, that was definitely not the expectation when they flashed the new logo on the screen. It's like, why is there an owl?
That's probably my favorite part of the new intro to Impact Wrestling, like the owls just flying around for some damn reason.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it doesn't offend me by any means, and good on them if they want to have a logo. But it's just an interesting pick to choose an owl to fit in with wrestling.
Well,
I think maybe
for one of the things that TNA might be going for there, excuse me, Impact Wrestling might be going for there, is to make people wonder who is coming out next. Who?
That might have been the most hackiest thing we've ever done, gentlemen, collectively.
But it is wonderful that we're all together on it.
we got a great show this week. This is a jam-packed edition of Clotheslines and Headlines, a lineup befitting the 20th episode. I guess if this were the WWE, would this be the 20th anniversary show?
Yes, that math would be correct, and the WWE math, which I took in high school.
Only making me angrier, Nate.
So just to whet the people's appetite, to give them a little bit of a tease off the top, Steve Willey, can you let the people know what we've got in store for them this week?
Yeah, like Hillary Clinton, it takes a nation to raise a child, and it takes a nation to raise our listeners. So we brought together a cavalcade of interviews, and then we'll do some of our normal segments. Our first segment will come out after the break. It was a pre-taped interview I did earlier today with the Ring of Honor world champion, Christopher Daniels, who won last weekend in their anniversary, 15th anniversary episode or show of the pay-per-view, and big shout out to our good friend Ben Morris for helping us get that together. And to be honest, I haven't really seen any interviews with Daniel since he won. So we're definitely one of the top couple interviews he's done since the championship victory. So that's a big deal. We'll come back to some WWE talk. And then Justin earlier today braved the time zones and swam across the Atlantic Ocean to talk to Alan Blackstock, who attended the WXW show. And for those who don't know, WXW is a longtime promotion in Germany. I'm assuming that's where this was. I think he must have gone to Germany for it, unless WXW was pulling in an England show. But I mean, there's lots of guys who've gone through there. Generico, a lot of the Japan guys. Chris Hero's gone through there. Brian Danielson's gone through there. So he has said that it was the greatest live wrestling experience he's ever had. So I haven't heard that yet. I'm excited. I'll be listening as soon as everyone else does. And then Glenn and I are going to come back, close out the show with just a little bit of Chikara talk, because Glenn went to one of the events over the last weekend.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, that is a... that is definitely a lineup that I think most people would pay for. But the good thing is, folks, you're getting this absolutely free. Alan Blackstock, Christopher Daniels, us three jabronis, and
J. Arsenio D'Amato making his yes. premiere, too. The big guest that I was teasing on Facebook yesterday. J. Arsenio D'Amato is joining us.
Yeah, so I don't think we should waste any more time up here off the top, you know, guys, talking about owls and making New Day references, which might get us sued by that company up north. So let's quit while we're ahead and get into this break. So when we come back on the other side, we can listen to your new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion. The inimitable is, I think, what I would call him, Brother Glenn. Inimitable. That's a good word.
Absolutely.
The inimitable Christopher Daniels. And we'll see what he has to get off of his chest.
We are back on Clotheslines and Headlines, episode number 20. It's an anniversary episode of sorts. And our first guest also celebrated a milestone this weekend at Ring of Honor's 15th anniversary show, where he fulfilled a destiny. You've heard him previously on our network of shows, including Place to Be Podcast and Kevin Kelly Show. I would call him a legend of the past and the present and the future. And he's the new Ring of Honor World Champion, Mr. Christopher Daniels. Chris, how are you doing after that big whirlwind weekend in Vegas?
I'm doing great, man. I'm on cloud nine, honestly. And, you know, I'm just happy that, everything went the way I wanted it to go this weekend.
Well, when I heard that you were going to be joining us today, and I kind of reflected back into the shows that I've attended as I was coming up with some questions, and I realized that I have seen you perform in person for 20 years now. And that's, as a fan, that's an amazing amount of time to be able to see someone perform. But I feel we're doing the performance now for yourself for even longer. That's just got to be a completely different ball game to actually do the performance. So, like, at this point in your career, how does winning such an important title feel?
It feels exactly like you would think, man. For me, wrestling for 24 years and always being told, like, oh man, you're really great, and never getting that one major world title victory, like, I heard for a very long time, especially throughout Ring of Honor and in my TNA years, oh man, the greatest wrestler that never was world champion. And I think people, when they say that, they mean it to be a compliment, like, man, you were so good, but they don't realize that also, it brings up your greatest, like, your flaw, I suppose, or your biggest defeats of your career. So, like, I'm glad to finally sort of shed that moniker of being the best that never was world champion. It feels outstanding. And, you know, I also, it's a weight off my shoulders, but I also realize that, especially with this being Ring of Honor and the quality of talent in Ring of Honor, I realize that my work starts now.
Yeah, it's kind of like in school getting the A- constantly and just like wanting to push yourself over. Like, you know that you're doing really well, but you just want to get that extra push to get the A to bump up the GPA. And yeah, it did feel like you had several opportunities where it was, you're going to go over the pump, like in the beginning of, you know, the Ring of Honor tenure, and you know, in TNA, there was, you know, times where you're running around with Joe and Styles, and then when you came back to Ring of Honor, too. So I couldn't believe that it was 5 years since your last title opportunity in Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that had to do with, you know, TNA and being, you know, setting the tag team with Frankie Kazarian. I think a lot of that had to do with it. You know, I wrestled for the TNA world title in 2012 or 13, I believe.
Sure, sure.
But that was my past actual world title match. You know, and I was fine with that because I was, when I was concentrating on the tag team with Frankie, you know, that was the goal, was to make the tag team as best as we could. And you know, part of that is just sort of understanding that the team is not Christopher Daniels and a sidekick. It's not Frankie Kazarian and a junior partner. We were equals in that tag team. And so we sort of put aside all that other, all the other goals just to make the team the best that we could. And, but I think the difference between that and this now is that Frankie sort of understood that this was going to be possibly the last opportunity for me to become world champion in my career. And, you know, he and I, he supported me 100%. And, you know, when the time came, he was where I needed him to be.
Well, speaking of Frankie, I have to come clear with something, clean with something. A couple episodes ago, I was talking with our managing editor, Brad, and we kind of groaned and had our eyebrows raised when Frankie joined the Bullet Club, and we totally fell for it. We totally fell for the ruse, and it was part of the master plan and led to the surprise reveal. And it feels like the Ring of Honor has had a few of those surprises this year, I mean, even in the last just month alone. Like, in these days of everything being spoiled for you before it plays out, how important do you feel that those surprises need to happen in wrestling?
Well, I feel like that's sort of the drawback of information being so readily available, especially, you know, the internet. And you know, people talk about, in wrestling, they talk about the dirt sheets. They talk about the spoilers and the stooges giving things away. But I feel like in that quest to want to know things before anyone else, you sort of lose enjoying the story as it unfolds. For me, I was thrilled that this sort of went down the way it did, and it caught everybody unawares. I mean, I did see a couple of people, you know, speculate that that was going on, but they had no idea, and they didn't know until they needed to know, and that's what I think was most enjoyable about it. I mean, I was in the ring when it was going down, and to hear the reaction when Frankie ripped open the shirt and had my shirt on underneath, like, I heard people's reactions to that, and it was genuine. And so that, to me, is what we all strive to get, is that genuine emotional response from what we're doing in the ring. And I feel like, you know, everything that we did in that match, I felt like what we wanted to get out of it, we did.
Yeah, and it's like, it felt like there were a couple matches that really had the crowd buzzing. After that pay-per-view was over, and I watched it probably a day after, I want to say, is when I watched it, you heard, like, the gasps in the crowd, and that's that emotional moment. Like, you feel it as a fan, but you forget that you in the ring feel that as well, and that's when you know you've done something.
Yeah, man, I honestly, I said it on my Twitter, I literally shed tears when it all happened. I mean, just that sense of relief and gratitude that the people were on my side and invested in the whole story. And, yeah, man, those emotional moments, they're emotional for me too. Like, I've been in the ring, and the reaction of certain things have caught me so, you know, in the heart that, you know, you just get caught up and you well up. And, you know, I didn't have to, but I mean, they asked me to do a speech once we went off the air, and there was a couple times where I was cracking, my voice was cracking, and it was tough to get out my feelings towards the fans in that building that night. But you know, I wouldn't have changed a thing, honestly.
Yeah, and it felt too like the interview before the show. I think it was like the week before on TV. That was fairly emotional as well, and it was kind of the crescendo to you know, the story is the whole 15 years, of course, but, you know, this particular arc really, I would say, started at Ladder Wars after that match. And that interview for me was the crescendo, and then it just kind of kept going into the match. Like, how difficult is that to put over? You know, mentioned, like, spoiling before, like, this long-term storytelling, especially, like, you know, people leave, tension spans go, injuries happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of just committing to tell that story, and you know, keeping as much of it as close to your vest as you can. You know, we're in that inner circle, and so it's up to us to sort of let the people that need to know, and everyone else just sort of let them learn as it happens. And so yeah, we you know, the people that knew what was going on, we just sort of, you know, there's no need to express it before the time comes. There's no need to let other people know. There's no need. And I feel like that's why so many people enjoyed it, is that they got caught off guard. I mean, you yourself, if you said you fell for it, then obviously the moment when it was revealed what was going on, you had to have a sense of enjoyment. Like, you got me. And there's so few of those moments anymore because everybody's trying to figure it all out ahead of time.
Yeah, definitely. That's the part. We try, like, even on this show, we try to keep it spoiler-free if something is, you know, taped ahead of time. And it is the frustration, like, you accidentally come across something. I'm watching the show This Is Us and just accidentally came across something just scrolling a completely different website. So I do hear that, that emotion that you get. That's why you use it, wrestling, as an escape or any sort of entertainment.
Yeah, so, like, absolutely, man. I always felt like wrestling, the whole point of it was just to have that cathartic release of going and enjoying, you know, letting down your guard in terms of your willing suspension of disbelief, and just going and having fun, and you know, cheering for who you like and booing the people you don't like, and getting that emotion out.
Yeah, I work with a lot of clients with different mental illnesses and disabilities, and to hear how many of them are wrestling fans, and that's basically the reason, is to be able to have this rough life, this very difficult life, and that's their way out. That's their escape, is, you know, seeing someone punch someone in the ring and not being able to do that in real life and getting that out, you know, defeat the demons as such.
Right.
So going forward now, as the champion, do your responsibilities change at all at work? Not just the injury stuff.
I mean, obviously, you know, when it comes to, I feel like the world champion is the number one representative of the company. Mm-hmm. And before I was world champion, I made myself available to be, you know, sort of that ambassador, like if guys needed interviews or if they wanted to talk about Ring of Honor, I tried to make myself readily available. But now it's sort of my responsibility as the champ to be able to, you know, come and do public relations and sort of spread the message about what Ring of Honor is. But I mean, so it hasn't changed. It's become more official, I guess, now that I have the championship. But it's nothing that, you know, I've always been that type of guy anyway. Like, even when I was with TNA, I tried to make myself available to be a good representative of the company. And, you know, we've got some great PR guys in Ring of Honor that work hard and try to get the message out about Ring of Honor and try to spread that spotlight, to widen that spotlight to the press. And so, yeah, now I'm going to be that guy that's on the 5 a.m. morning shows with the belt in his hand, telling people to give Ring of Honor a shot on their local station.
Yeah, and looking forward, you know, I'll help you with that PR work a little bit, because, you know, I like to lift up wrestling. So you have several events coming up. You have Supercard of Honor, of course, on that big wrestling weekend on April 1st, and yeah, I'll hopefully be seeing you in Milwaukee on April 28th, and then you have... Yeah, the War of the Worlds tour, which is now annual.
You know, the New Japan talent coming over, I feel like that's become like you said, an annual event. It's become a high mark for our base. And in the world are over there right now. And yeah, it's always a highlight, and be able to spread it out over four shows. It's you know, it's great to sort of bring that type of energy to all the different markets that we're having the tour in this year.
And when you look at the rosters, you know, you talked before about, you know, concentrating on the tag team with Frankie, like anyone you're looking at on that ROH or New Japan roster for those shows, and you get a little excited about getting in the ring one-on-one with?
Oh man, I've had the opportunity to be in the ring with Tanahashi and Okada on many occasions, Naito, and it's always a pleasure, man. They're so good, and you know, they push me to be better. You know, they're world-class athletes, they're world-class wrestlers, and just the opportunity to get in the ring and trade holds with them, it's an honor, man. It's a privilege, and I look forward to it. And I'm not sure what I'm even going to be doing on that tour yet. You know, it's still so new, and I'm sure they'll announce some sort of title match for me during that tour at some point. Who knows if it'll be a Ring of Honor guy or a New Japan guy. But, you know, that's, again, part of the job, man. I'm ready to go. And if I get a chance to wrestle one of the New Japan guys in a title match, it's going to be great. I'm going to have an awesome time doing it.
So in terms of being ready to go, we actually talked for a second before we started, but, you know, physical health is important. And, you know, I mentioned I've watched you for about 20 years, and I hit 40 last year, and I've noticed everything kind of slowing down in the body, you know, athletic ability starting to go. So I'm sure you've been asked this before, but how have you been able to keep in shape to perform at such a high level at this point?
Well, I feel like, first of all, part of it comes from the fact that I think I wrestle a very smart style. I don't think I've ever been the sort of risk taker where, you know, catastrophic injury was always a danger for me. I always tell guys, don't do something that you can't do 10 times out of 10. And so it's very rare that I slip up in the ring. You know, knock on wood. And apart from accidental things, I've been very fortunate to avoid big injuries. And also, too, like in the last couple of years, well, actually, probably within the last, like, 7 or 8 years, I've been very cognizant of taking care of my body in terms of working out with the mentality of recuperation. Like, mm-hmm. I do a lot of yoga. I do a lot of stretching. You know, I do a lot of my workouts for full body stuff. I'm not out there trying to lift the heaviest weight because my mentality is for performance. So I'm doing a lot of like high intensity interval training, stuff that gets my stamina up, stuff that trains me in a functional manner. You know, I was never going to be a bodybuilder anyway, but to be able to perform for me, that was the most important thing. And so my workouts sort of reflected that, you know, with the mentality of stamina and as looking aesthetically as good as I can, but really just concentrating more on how I moved, how I performed, and keeping that stamina at a top level.
And it's great to hear. It's like, you know, and I asked almost strictly for myself on that one, because it's nice to be able to have, you know, role models to say, hey, you know, this is capable. I look at yourself and like someone like Chris Jericho, who's, you know, still definitely in amazing shape. And so it's like, hey, okay, if they can do it, I can still do it as well. And so can everyone else.
Yeah, man, so it's possible. And I, you know, it's harder work, honestly. And, you know, every morning I wake up and I sort of have to convince myself you got to get there. Because, you know, the days off are also the days that sort of take away, man. I try not to have days off in that respect. And I have to just remind myself, hey man, it's on you. It's your job to be in the shape that you need to be in, and so it's tough. But I'm getting better at it, man. Every day is a struggle, and I get through it.
Well, we definitely thank you for taking the time out today, driving along. Before I let you go, though, I wanted to do one quick non-wrestling topic because our buddy Ben, okay, who set us up today, Ben Morris,
yes.
He has, of course, just like me and yourself, a shared love of comic books. And so I was wondering, right, if you had any recommendations from what you've been reading now. And are you doing anything as a creator right now as well?
Okay. Well, first of all, as a fan, I've always been a big fan of Brian Michael Bendis. Mm-hmm. So right now, is Jessica Jones, his infamous Iron Man, his Invincible Iron Man. That stuff is outstanding. I'm looking forward to see how he ends his run on Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that might be the last issue today, releasing today. I'm not sure. I'm a big fan of Nick Spencer, what he's doing with Captain America. I think that's just like the first issue of Steve Rogers' Captain America, the one that everybody flipped out about. I just thought it was genius. And, you know, the reveal, the next issue, I just thought it was outstanding, and I'm looking forward to Secret Empire. Dan Slott I'm a big fan of his work. His Spider-Man and his Silver Surfer, are top notch. And then as far as a creator, we just recently released my second, collaboration with Art Baltazar and Franco, called, Oh Yeah Comics Team Up Number One. You know, we'd had the book, Christopher Daniels and Kazarian Russell, Oh Yeah Comics. We released that about 2014, and we had a great response. It wasn't too long after that that I wrote a two-part follow-up. And, you know, Art Baltazar is so well-respected. He's so in demand as a creator. It just took a while to finally get the opportunity for him to work on it. But we finally got it out. That's available at ROHWrestling.com and at OhYeahComics.com. And at live events around the world. So Frankie and I are signing that because, you know, that's what those creators do. We sign those books and we get them out there. And hopefully some young fans at Ring of Honor shows are falling in love with comics the same way me and Frankie did.
Yeah, that's it's a young age for myself as well. And my youngest son is 6, and he's starting to check out the Star Wars comic books. And my oldest is trying to rebel and not do that, but he has fallen into some of the other graphic novels for young adults, which is so cool to see, you know, your kids getting into your own hobbies too. So yeah, Art Baltazar, always known for those all ages books, and a great stepping stone for kids.
Absolutely, man. I've always said him and Franco are the Pixar of all ages comics, man. So I'm so lucky that I've got the pedigree of that they have sort of on my side with these books.
Yeah, it's really cool, and it's great that you have that outlet, not just to be creative in the ring, but to be creative at home as well. Well, Chris, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Safe travels, and hopefully I will see you in Milwaukee in a few weeks' time, and we'll be seeing you all over the place in April and May.
Yes, sir, and thank you so much for everything, and thanks to all the listeners for all the support, man. The last couple of weeks for me have been sort of a whirlwind, and I don't get a chance to thank everybody like I should, so thanks for all the support to all the listeners. I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for the rabid fan base of Ring of Honor and of pro wrestling in general, so...
Well, and thank you, and like I said, we'll be seeing you soon, and again, congratulations on your win. We'll be right back here on Clotheslines and Headlines. We'll be talking a little bit of WWE, and we'll be right back. New flavor in your air, brand new flavor in your air. Craig Mack, 1,000 degrees. You'll be on your knees, and you'll be burning, begging, please. Brother Freeze, man's undisputed and deep-rooted folks. Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
We are back on Clotheslines and Headlines, continuing this excellent adventure, if you will. And before we get into this next segment, hey, Steve Willie.
Yeah.
Good job, man.
Thank you. Thank you. I got a little sweaty under the armpits when we were doing that. A little nervous. But Christopher Daniels is a pro in the ring and out of the ring. So it was smooth sailing for that interview.
Absolutely. And, you know, you want to talk about professionals and being in and out of the ring. We've got a debut, if you will, in this segment. This gentleman should be no stranger to the Place to Be Nation listeners out there. But he is making his maiden voyage, if you will, on Clotheslines and Headlines. And he's going to join us not only to talk about all things WWE, but also a little ROH here off the top. So, ladies and gentlemen, you know him. You love him. Give it up for the one and only John Arsenio D'Amato. Brother Arsenio, how you doing, my friend?
Thank you, Brother Nate. That was a gracious welcome. It's tough to follow the champ, but he came through at 45, and I just hit the big 5-0, so hopefully I can come through for you guys.
The average age of this show between you, myself, and Christopher Daniels shot way up. Because I'm hitting 41 in a couple weeks here. But John, you're I was mentioning to Daniels that, you know, he's an incredible shape for a man his age, and you're in an incredible shape for a man your age as well. Good role models to look up to.
Hey, John's old enough to be a WWE main eventer at WrestleMania this year at this rate.
Well, John, before we talk about a little modern-day WWE stuff, you got to attend the Ring of Honor show in Manhattan. Manhattan Mayhem, I believe, was on the 4th, yes, going into the pay-per-view. And you had quite the show to watch. Was there any big takeaways for you? Anything that got you excited?
Well, I mean, in this day and age where the WrestleMania card is, everybody knows it 6 months ahead of time and there's no more surprises. There was quite a nice surprise when Brother Nero and Broken Matt appeared, because that was totally unexpected. Because, like I said, everything now is programmed ahead of time, where everybody knows what's going to happen. So that was a nice surprise when they showed up to challenge the Young Bucks, and then you just figured that they were going to be there and challenge the Young Bucks, and the Bucks would just kind of tip out, and they were just going to set up for the big match at for the pay-per-view, and also for the big match on WrestleMania weekend at Lakeland. But it was another shock that the match took place right then and there. And so then you figured after a couple minutes that the Bucks would kind of, you know, just tip out, and, you know, the Hardys would win on a count out. But it was actually a 10-minute match, and the Hardys took the belts. That was and the place just went crazy. I mean, it was definitely a moment, because nowadays everything is given up on a pay-per-view or for the big show that they're planning the day before Mania. And it was a nice surprise to see a title change like that happen at a house show.
Yeah, the Manhattan shows are always pretty big, but that was a house show. It was all the shows go on a video on demand, but it wasn't on pay-per-view. It wasn't like an event weekend like Supercard of Honor will be, or, you know, one of the shows where they bring the New Japan guys. It was a second tier show, and that was what we talked last segment to when I talked to Daniels about, was how fun it is and how important it is to still have those surprises in wrestling, where not just the cards are taped 6 months in advance, you know what it's going to be 6 months in advance, but everything gets spoiled. So, if something's taped, everyone's trying to figure out the card and who's going to win before it even happens. And, man, I saw the video both when the Hardys came in and when the Hardys won the belt. And that is about as loud of a crowd noise that you can get proportional to the audience. How much does that place, I sound like Art Donovan right now. How much does that place hold? It's a couple thousand, I think.
Just under 2,000. And it's such an iconic building. Of course, everybody knows from all the Raws in the 90s, and the two one night stands. I was there for the both the one night stands, and then thanks to the guys, they introduced me to the ROH. The first show I went there was about 4 years ago, before WrestleMania 29. the Card of Honor, Super Card of Honor, where, where Jay Briscoe won the title from Kevin Steen, and that was great at that night. And that was also, you know, the night I met the boys, Justin, Scott, and the gang. So that was pretty special. But it's a special building, and they went away for a while. They went to this Terminal 5, which is kind of like a nightclub, which is standing only, and Jay doesn't do standing only at this stage. So
neither do I. Give me a first row balcony over standing in the pit these days.
Steve, that's exactly where I post up, and it's great for them to be back. It's great for them to be back in the Manhattan. I was there for the final battle, which was another great show, and that's it. As a ringside member, you get first dibs, and that's exactly my first choice, first row in the balcony, and you can't get a better view than that. And plus, it's affordable in these days. Two Jacksons gets you a nice seat, and you know, compared to what I got to go through for in a couple weeks. Where I'm attending the Hall of Fame, NXT, and the Mania, which, in order to build up the funds for that, I had to bust out the size 14 pumps, red wig, and some seersucker red lipstick, and I had to turn a few tricks to raise the money for that. So.
I think outside the USS Intrepid.
Yes. So ROH gives you a nice bang for the buck, and for the indie guys, I mean, Dragon Lee and Will Ospreay, I mean, come on, that was just a sick 10 minutes that can't be described. It was just so fast. I have to go back and catch it on the VOD, because there were just so many amazing moves that they squeezed in those 10 minutes. So it was an epic night, definitely. I recommend anybody, if ROH comes to your town, hit it up.
Yeah, they're coming up my way at the end of April, and I'm going to go grab, and I'm serious too, a first row balcony. They have the tickets are available, and so I'm going to go hit that up and be able to watch everybody overhead, and usually some of the wrestlers come around to watch too, so it's a good time.
Yeah, so, very kid friendly. They have, meet and greets. Like, as a matter of fact, Matt and Jeff, like, right after, that was the match they had intermission right next, so, you know, people mobbed them for the meet and greets that night too, so. Not only for a surprise appearance, you know, a lot of people got a picture with them and stuff like that. So it was quite the spectacle.
Well, you know, speaking of spectacles, we've had a nice little scenic trip here on this ROH highway. But as you all know, boys, it's time to get back in the fast lane. It's time to get ready for that. Ultimate Thrill Ride is, I believe, what we're contractually obligated to say, and continue down this road to WrestleMania. Now, as of right now, as of the night we're recording this, we've got 11 matches on the card already made. And before we get into any of the particulars, I just want to kind of go around the horn and see where our interest level is right now for WrestleMania. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put your interest level, guys?
Hmm. Oh, geez.
Why don't you go ahead first, Glenn, while I think about that?
I would place, out of 10, I would say about like a 2.
Mm.
I can't remember a WrestleMania since I've been a wrestling fan that I was like less excited for since 29, which happened during the year that I wasn't watching wrestling.
Mm. Man. What about you, John?
Well, if I wasn't going, it would definitely be between a 3 and a solid 3.5. 3 and 4. Because I'm going to hang out with the fellas and see what the NXT card is shaping up as, that brings it up to about a 7. But yeah, if I wasn't going, it would definitely be in Glenn's area of substitute.
Yeah, I was joking that
Fastlane
was my WrestleMania because I got to go, and everyone else that I was talking to didn't have much of excitement around the car, and I think maybe my excitement was just jacked because I knew I was going to be there. I'm like, how can you not be excited? Samoa Joe and Sami Zayn, my guy Tozawa is going to be on there, like Bayley and Charlotte in a title match, and like Owens and Goldberg. Like, who would have ever thought that match would happen? And so that was my mania. And then you're looking forward ahead. And not so much. I would say about a 4. If you talk about the entire weekend as a whole, when you, outside of WWE and your NXT, and you know, I'm excited to see Kurt Angle go into the Hall of Fame. And when you throw in all those other shows like Chikara and Evolve, like, well, then I go like a, you know, 8 or a 9 at least. But then WrestleMania would be down lower on the list besides just seeing it for the spectacle of it all. Like what moments will happen?
See, this is where I'm a little bit torn, because I think just on paper, this WrestleMania should be much better than last year's show, because I was really not a fan of last year's outing.
Yeah.
It'll probably be longer, which is something I'm not looking forward to.
How could it be?
They'll find a way. Hey, we got plenty of segments to fill with New Day ice cream bars and perhaps the Hardy showing up. So I think maybe I might be the most optimistic, because I'm going to say right now my interest level for WrestleMania is I'm going to go 4.5. I'm going to be the leader in the clubhouse.
There you go.
Leader in the clubhouse, still not on the on the positive half.
Damn.
I think there's a message there.
This is telling you something, because we on this show are generally really positive. We're not that critical about wrestling in general. So if we're down on it, imagine the people who are complaining about everything are at.
Yeah, and I guess let's go in and kind of take a look at some of the developments that has led us to the point where we now have these 11 matches announced, and one of them is not Shaquille O'Neal versus The Big Show, which just fills my heart with despair. But on Raw, these past couple weeks, we've had the further development of Owens versus Jericho, as well as Roman Reigns versus The Undertaker in the Battle of the Yard, I guess. And then on SmackDown, I don't know what the hell happened. Maybe the writers got some unused broken Matt Hardy scripts, because we've the past 2 weeks, we've had Randy Orton committing arson and Bray Wyatt rolling around in his dead sister's ashes. And this is building up to a world championship title match, fellas.
Sure is. For reasons passing understanding.
I guess the most debated and discussed topic, especially, you know, when it comes to the listeners here on Place to Be Nation, is the Shane McMahon AJ Styles match, which is much like death. It's unavoidable, and it's going to happen eventually. You just want it to happen in the most peaceful way possible, I guess. Let's start there, fellas. What are your thoughts on the Shane AJ matchup? Because I think AJ Styles is one of the best, if not the best, wrestlers on the planet, and he can certainly probably get a passable match out of Shane. I just don't know if I want to watch it.
Yeah, I completely agree. AJ has had, everybody has reflected on the year that AJ's had, you know, since he came in. We were talking about it in January, and he seems like the kind of guy where they find it hard to slot him in at WrestleMania because of the particular way that they build WrestleManias, where they're about, you know, everything's about the glitz and the glamour, but WrestleMania even more so, you know? And it's about producing capital W WrestleMania, capital M moments. And AJ is a guy who delivers in the ring all of the time, but slotting him into one of those super special banner WrestleMania matches it just doesn't quite fit, and they don't really know how to slot him into that formula yet.
It feels like if there's a McMahon, there's a way that they have to get on the show. and in a high-profile way. I don't know if this is their sneaky way of keeping all the WrestleMania money in the family or what, but if you're going to have an opponent for Shane, I'd rather have it be someone talented like AJ, like you said, Nate, so they can have a passable match, as opposed to The Undertaker, which I still argue might be the worst WrestleMania match of all time, just for the fact that, you know, there are others that might be 3 minutes long, but that was half an hour and even more with the entrances.
I don't know. That has some stiff competition from other Undertaker matches.
Yes. man. But oh yeah, like there are so many other people I'd rather see AJ in the ring with. And I bet if you were to ask him, like personally, like, hey, AJ, you okay with this? He would probably be fine because he's going to be in a very high profile match that's going to bring him a lot of cash, and he might not have to do that much work athletically. He's just going to have to kind of walk Shane through it. And yeah, as fans, as someone who likes to see the best possible matches, it upsets me because I think that AJ can have a passable match with anyone. Literally anyone. I could go in there and he could figure out a way to make me look good because he is that good at wrestling. So I'm extremely disappointed about that.
And I think Glenn brought up a good point about kind of the mindset of the company, at least, to favor these moments, maybe even more so over matches, John. And it's like, okay, cool. AJ and Shane, that's a WrestleMania moment, I guess. You know, looking back to that Undertaker match, that elbow drop is probably the most memorable thing to come off of that card, besides the fact that it was just too damn long. So yeah, they can create a moment, but in terms of a guy like AJ Styles, who I believe is 36, and you know, obviously he's great, but he's had some injuries and we don't know how long the prime of his career is going to last. Do you think they're kind of wasting what could be the opportunity to have a classic match with somebody that could give him a real match in terms of a technical performance?
Yes, definitely. I think we're about to get into it, but there's guys on the cruiserweight. There's Nakamura out there on NXT. And then there's guys on the main roster. I mean, I just don't understand the mind thinking of I don't want to say the McMahons or if it's Shane himself. But how could you be so tone deaf? Where like AJ, he's positioned as the number one heel on SmackDown, but if you listen to the crowds, he's really probably the number one or number two face with all the merchandise that he's selling and all the cheers that he gets. So why would you want to go against that and put yourself in the babyface position as Shane is? and also, Shane is putting himself as like the underdog. But he's actually in stature, he's actually bigger than AJ Styles. So you know, it's not like he's going up against a monster or something. So you know, they just slapped this last minute angle where AJ puts his head through the car door, and it just seems a little wonky that it doesn't make sense, that it was just kind of rushed. There wasn't really this building thing that we needed to see.
I think you have a good point about the crowd reaction, John, because this week on SmackDown, AJ was whining about not being in the main event, was whining about not having a match, attacked a non-wrestler, and then everyone still loved him so much that when Daniel Bryan fake-fired him, they booed Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, when Brian and Shane were arguing, Shane is the one that said that AJ should get the shot. Shane was defending him. So, none of this makes sense.
It's almost like AJ Styles is the anti-Roman Reigns, where with Roman, you have a babyface that a large portion of the fan will never accept as a babyface, or at least is not accepting him as he's currently being positioned. And AJ, no matter how hard they try, people love this dude.
Yeah. No matter what Roman does, he gets booed. And no matter what AJ does, he'll get cheered. And that pretty much sums it up.
but John did bring up an interesting mental exercise, if you will, a theoretical challenge, if you will. And that is it possible that the Shane AJ match, because I think, Glenn, we've had some listeners say that, you know, this is the best match available with the talent that's available, AJ versus Shane. So I guess our challenge would be to find, is that actually a correct hypothesis?
Yeah, well, to think that a match with Shane McMahon is the best match available for anyone isn't really a mindset I understand. But, I mean, if you really, really like Shane, and whose favorite wrestler is Shane McMahon? Are you kidding me? But
somebody out there, there's some 35, 36 year old dude who's still wearing his Mean Street Posse jersey that just loves Shane O'Mac.
Yeah, I suppose, you know what? I'm not here to judge. I'm not here to yuck someone's yum. like what you like. I'm glad there's something in the world that brings you joy. But
and to be fair though, like I'm not a Shane McMahon hater. Like I think he serves a purpose on the roster. This just isn't the right purpose.
Sure. Right. So Steve got me thinking earlier. Could you put together a list of people who are not yet booked on WrestleMania who would make for a better match with AJ Styles? And so I just kind of looked down the roster list, looked down the list of who is not yet booked, and this really runs the gamut, right? You know, there's Primo and Epico and Aiden English and all these people who could still have a very fine match with AJ Styles, I am sure. But, you know, you also have a couple of heavy hitters. Like, Samoa Joe doesn't have a match, you know?
Mm.
And that's obviously a match that we've seen in TNA, we've seen elsewhere, and it was really awesome. Sami Zayn, I don't think, has a match yet.
Nope.
You know, and even if you get to people like Luke Harper, who they just fought on SmackDown, and that was pretty good. Yep. Goldust, imagine that match. You know, if we're gonna cast our imaginations out a little bit, Kalisto, I'm sure that would be a very interesting, interesting match, and could keep the face heel dynamic even. Mark Henry, I'm sure AJ could guide him through a good match. Dean Ambrose, we've seen them fight multiple times, not really that much of a WrestleMania match. How about Braun Strowman?
Wow.
Hmm. That'd be an interesting one.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to fantasy book that because, you know, he is not doing anything at this point. He might be inserted in the Battle Royal, I guess. Maybe into the Reigns match somehow. But that would be a fun high flyer technical guy against a giant hoss.
Yeah, exactly. And another kind of bigger guy for AJ to go up against. The New Day has been cast as the hosts of WrestleMania. How about AJ versus Big E?
Yeah. I, in the back of my mind, that was something I thought of. And also, if you want that high flyer matchup, AJ and Kofi, I think, would be a phenomenal match. No pun intended.
Sure. And that's leaving out even the entire cruiserweight division, which just plug anyone in there, right, Steve?
Oh, yeah. I could easily... That would be my match of the night, the match I would be looking most forward to. If you threw like Tozawa in there or Kendrick, I mean, they have a long back history. Even
you're
going to
go AJ and Noam Dar because you want to see Alicia Fox.
Alicia Fox, who was over at Fastlane, by the way, she was getting some heel heat. She knew what she was doing.
All right. How about AJ and Tajiri?
Oh. Yeah, you know, I didn't even think about him.
You know, AJ and Drew Gulak. AJ and he just got injured recently, sadly. How about Cedric Alexander?
That'd be really good.
Yeah, they had a match in Ring of Honor when AJ came through for the 1 year, and it was a pretty excellent match.
Who else is coming back recently? He doesn't have a match yet. Oh, I know. Finn Balor.
Already a backstory in place.
Right.
You have the man who, AJ, who usurped Finn Balor as leader of the Bullet Club. They've made mention of the Bullet Club before, so it's not like it would be out of character. yeah. Already right there.
And also a ton of guys on the NXT roster that could get promoted to for AJ.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's Rude, there's Nakamura, there's...
Roddy Strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have... No Way Jose?
Sure.
I would rather see that than Shane versus AJ.
Hideo Itami, I think, just made his return.
Mm.
Again.
Even Eric Young.
Yeah.
Yeah, why? Hey, guys, I don't think Oney Lorcan is booked.
the former Big Bully. What was his nickname? And
Busick.
That's what. Yeah. Yeah. Again, would rather see that than Shane versus AJ.
Exactly. AJ versus Shane against AJ versus Razor.
I don't even know who that is.
Authors of Pain. Oh, how about AJ vs. Paul Ellering?
Paul Ellering in there.
I'm sensing a theme here, Glenn, that there's a lot of other ways that they could go if they were truly concerned about putting together the best card and not just creating a moment that they could show and replay on Raw and on highlight videos and on the network.
Well, the thing is, though, if you want a moment you can replay, they make so much out of dives and flips and planches and all this stuff. Put AJ versus Sami Zayn in there and give them some time on the WrestleMania stage. They'll have a moment you can keep replaying. You know, put Samoa Joe in there and AJ can do some insane flippy-do onto him, and you have a moment you can keep replaying, you know?
And the Sami Zayn one isn't even hard to book with the Raw and SmackDown separation, because Stephanie's been kind of burying him all along and saying that Foley should fire him. They could have fired him, and then Daniel Bryan would be, and Shane would be like, oh, you know, you don't want him, we'll take him. We can watch this match that we can put on with, you know, the two of the greatest stars in the world.
Oh, yeah, I've been completely ignoring the brand split for this because I figure it's the easiest thing in the world to do a Raw versus SmackDown WrestleMania match. You know, they used to do it all the time.
So you're saying Jinder Mahal and AJ is what you're looking for?
You know what? You know what? If the alternative is Shane... I hate to be that negative.
Hey, you never know, Glenn. Like, Shane McMahon could surprise us. He might be training as we speak.
Hey, you know, this is WWE we're talking about. Kane isn't booked yet.
Mm. Oh, man. That's a tough one, too, right there. See, I like that we're getting down to the nitty-gritty where we're actually like, okay, well, there might be a couple people that we wouldn't want to see against AJ.
I guess maybe that's a better question, Steve Willie. Like, is there somebody who you think you would rather not see? Because I know we were joking about it before we started recording tonight, but Glenn had brought up Mojo Rawley, and I'm like, I don't know. If the choice is Mojo Rawley in one hand, Shane on the other, I might lean towards Shane, maybe.
The only thing is that Mojo could come out and be all silly and obnoxious, and then AJ can just springboard, you know, forearm him, and then give him a couple Styles Clashers, and there you go. And we never see Mojo again.
Just to throw out one ray of optimism, maybe the presence of Kurt Angle there on the weekend, and they'll recreate Kurt and Shane from King of the Ring. That's about the one ray of optimism. And plus, I mean, we're shitting on Shane, but he did come back, and he's in actually better shape than he was, you know, 10 years ago when he was in his matches. What throws everybody off is he doesn't do the Just for Men, so that makes him like look a lot older. But actually, but actually, physically, body wise, he's in he was a lot doughier, you know, 10 years ago when he was wrestling. So he is a lot more solid. So
yeah, that's true.
I'll just throw that optimism out then. But I'm still on the pessimistic side. But.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. You think about like 07 when he was fighting Bobby Lashley, and 06 when he was fighting Shawn Michaels. You know, that stuff wasn't great.
Yeah. I think that John brings up a good point in that the hair, the aesthetic of an older Shane McMahon might be playing on us, because every time he comes on the screen, I have that flashback of Keith Hernandez and Clyde Frazier in the commercial, like, no play for Mr. Gray. Rejected. but I like John's idea, guys, of ending on a positive note. So I think we should, man, because on this show we try to be positive. We try to have a good outlook on things. So if there is one match of the 11 matches, which, again, is kind of ridiculous, one match of the 11 matches currently booked for WrestleMania, is there one that you're actually looking forward to? And we can start with you, Glenn.
I am going to say the triple threat for the Raw women's title. I really, really like...
Wait, Glenn, wait. Don't you mean four-way dance?
Oh, goodness, is it now? Have I missed the news?
It's not yet, but it will be. You can't ignore my future ex-wife, Nia Jax.
I got no problem with that.
If Nia Jax is like Wu-Tang at the Grammys. If Nia Jax doesn't win, then everybody loses.
Sure. Insert her only makes it funner.
That's my motto for life. Less about that. Steve Willie, is there a match you're looking forward to on the card right now?
100% Adrian Neville versus Austin Aries.
Yes.
I'm very happy that Aries is healed up and they put him right on the main roster instead of having him in NXT. So definitely looking forward to that. Oh, go ahead.
Pretty cool that it's a one-on-one match too and not, you know, the Cruiserweight Open.
Right.
If they get that time, I think that could be a show stealer if they give it time.
Yeah, and I wouldn't mind them having some sort of Cruiserweight Open. Just throw six guys out there, maybe have a six-man tag, you know, early on in the show to get everyone pumped up with some crazy moves. And then I'm also, man, I'm going to go against myself. I don't ever want to see Undertaker in a ring anymore because I respect everything he's done, but I don't want to see him just look terrible out there and I don't want to see him get hurt.
Yeah.
But I'm intrigued about the angle and what they're going to do with Roman Reigns and Undertaker and, you know, how Braun might fit in there and will Roman go over? Because now it's not automatically a gimme that Taker is going to win.
Right. And I think, man, if they end up finally listening to the fans or seeing what the fans are saying and make this the break where Roman is a heel and he does go over the Undertaker, man, you got a really hot, badass villain coming out of WrestleMania if they go through with that.
Yeah, and before I forget, too, Goldberg and Lesnar, again, possible train wreck, and in a good way. You know, you never know what's going to happen in a match like that. The Survivor Series thing was super short, but it was like we talked about before with John, like it was a total surprise, and it was a good moment, I thought. We'll see what happens there.
We're supposed to be ending on an optimistic note, but oh, jeez. Yeah. I just can't stop thinking that it is super obvious that the big hulking Aryan man is obviously going to beat the Jewish superhero. And we don't need that in the world right now.
Oh, no. You ruined WrestleMania for me, Glenn Butler.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But that's all I think about whenever I see people hyping that match.
Oh, no. Glenn Butler has ruined Christmas. brother John, if you could find any way to bring us out of this spiral, what are you looking forward to at WrestleMania?
Definitely Jericho and KO. I mean, with all the negative that angle, and then them two have just worked over the last few months. That everything was done to perfection, including the turn, and we're definitely looking forward to see how that ends. And also, in the Orton Bray, to see if we finally get to see Sister Abigail, if they bust something out with that, that has been rumored for the longest time. Maybe Glenn's girl, Eva Marie, is going to come out as Sister Abigail with no teeth and something like that.
Yeah, she's been abducted and terrible things have been done. Oh, crap, I didn't mean it like that!
Wow, you're on a roll here, Glenn.
Oh, no, I got to stop.
Somebody shut off Glenn's mic for the rest of the segment. I agree with Brother John that I think Owens and Jericho has the potential to be a really hot match, and I think it should be one of the highlights on the card. Neville and Aries should be really fun. And I'm intrigued with Reigns, Taker, and also the aforementioned World War II analog that Glenn mentioned in the main event. with Goldberg and Brock. But I think, and this is a contingent choice, but I think in the SmackDown's women title match, which is open to any available woman on the roster, if Naomi is able to compete at WrestleMania and she's like the last entrant and gets to do her, you know, her entrance with the glow and all that stuff in her hometown and wins the title, I think that could be a really cool WrestleMania moment, which is what they seem to want these days.
Yeah, my only other thought is, can we do that? If Naomi can't go, is that the time for Asuka? Because she was on the Madison Square Garden show that just happened recently. Who knows? That could be those moments are what draws into WrestleMania. It seems like some of the other shows are more for the matches of your 4-star matches. There'll be one or two. I'm sure Owens and Jericho will be great.
Yeah. And like any road you travel, the road to WrestleMania is no different. You know, you got some great views, you've got some bumpy spots, and every now and then you got to pay a toll like Shane McMahon and AJ Styles. So we got that to look forward to. But Brother John, thank you for sitting in with us this week, man, and sharing your thoughts not only on all things WWE, but also with your recent ROH experience. It was fun having you on, brother.
Yes, I was honored. Thanks. And I'll be hitting the War of the Worlds in May. And if you need me as an ROH correspondent, I'm available. I got an open schedule.
And I was going to toss it over to Glenn to take us out, but we know how well that's going lately. So, Steve Willie, can you class up this joint and send us to break?
Well, we talked about having a worldwide, many different interviews today, and Justin earlier today did have an interview with Alan Blackstock, formerly of Letters from Kayfabe, who attended the WXW show. So, man, Glenn, you made me do it. More Aryan Nation talk coming up on Clotheslines and Headlines.
Oh.
No! Issue,
wait a second. More German wrestling talk?
Aryan Nation.
Episode 20. We're going off the rails, folks.
Aryan Nation. I didn't know so many people were Arian Foster fans.
Ariana Grande.
There you go.
Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySimulation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaySimulation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaySimulation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySimulation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySimulation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Place to be Nation, welcome back to episode number 20 of PTBN Clotheslines and Headlines. You didn't think I was going to make it this episode. I don't know what they would have told you to start the show, but I am here. and I am always here when I have, I guess, to steal liberally from my PIC, Scott Criscolo, my favorite chap on the planet, over from Jolly Old England. That is the one and only Alan Blackstock. Alan, how are you, sir?
I'm absolutely brilliant. Still on a high from another great weekend show. I think last time you had me on was for the WWE UK tournament where I ran through that, where I was also on a high. My voice was gone and shot that weekend. I've had an extra day to recover now. My voice was hoarse again, as normal. I like to do some chants and some shouts when I get into the matches. But yeah, a fantastic weekend of wrestling in Germany. So I'm happy to talk about that with you, JT.
Yeah, great to have you here. You know, you're the well, I guess you're the main event because we already talked to Christopher Daniels here tonight. So he was an undercard, you know, jerking the curtain for you, buddy. So big night. And of course, the show you're talking about was WXW 16 Carat, was a tournament down in Germany, or over in Germany. I guess down for you, right? Down in Germany.
Yeah, it was down south.
Which you did make the trip for. And I wanted to have you on here because this was a, you know, a really, really hot topic across Twitter and across the internet. Promotion that's getting some buzz and a show that was getting some buzz. And you were there as an invited guest, so we wanted to have you on. So I'm just going to kind of sit back if you want to talk about your experience with the promotion, you know, put them over a bit or not, whatever you want to do, and then talk about your experience, and then we can go through a couple of questions we got queued up here.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so the promotion I went to see was called West Side Extreme Wrestling, WXW for short. They've been running in Germany now for around about 16, 17 years. The most famous really for English speaking for the tournament that they have each year around this time, which is the 16 Carat tournament. And there's been a lot of winners over the years in this tournament. Last year it was Zack Sabre Jr., the year before Tommy End. We've had Chris Hero winning it, El Generico, Sammy Callahan, Shingo. So there's some big names there that have, you know, worked around the world that have won the tournament in the past to give it some prestige. So I was invited this year to go to the tournament. There was a number of people who was invited from different media outlets, different radio stations in the UK. I was invited representing Place to Be Nation. So it was a really good opportunity for me to familiarise myself with the promotion, because it's not really a promotion that was on my radar all the time. Obviously, any big matches, I would try and track them down, any that were touted. But some of the names, the German guys that work in the shows, I wasn't as familiar with. So this was a good weekend and a good opportunity for me to kind of see what these guys were all about. So with yourself, JT, have you really seen anything to do with this promotion?
No, I can't say I have, Alan. I've seen the buzz, though, and I know there's a lot of recommendations for this show and for others. So it's something that's definitely on my radar to check out.
Yeah, so the shows themselves, there was five shows I saw over the weekend. On the Thursday night, there was actually a academy show. WXW have quite an impressive academy setup where they have just a standard kind of ring in a big room area where there's a small weights and, you know, some crash mats and things like that. But on top of that, they've got offices attached to it where they have five full-time employees who work for WXW all the time. So these aren't guys that are volunteers that are only come in and work a couple of days a week and do another job as well. These are full-time employees, so they're actually a promoter that wants to kind of be professional, and that came across to me the entire weekend. From the production to just little things, we had press conferences, and they were just really well ran. And I think the promotion itself is a promotion we're going to be hearing more and more of. So just getting back to the first show, it was called Inner Circle 3 at the actual WXW Academy that I went down to, and there's five matches on the show. It was some names that we've all heard of, and you know, I think maybe one person that was really academy guy. This is the biggest kind of academy show they run in the year. So it was a big deal. So whoever's from the academy, it's a big deal to have them on this show still. So we had Paul London in working this show. He worked his socks off the entire weekend, but he was on this. He beat a guy called Absolute Andy, who I'll talk about later. We had Walter defeating ACH. So that was quite a good match. Walter's a big name in Germany, and another guy I'll get to. And obviously ACH has, you know, worked around the world recently, you know, in New Japan as well as Tiger the Dark. So that was good to see them up close. So there's only 100 people at these shows, JT. Oh, wow. So it's a really intimate atmosphere. So, you know, in WXW as well, there's no ring barriers. So three sides of the ring, all the fans can stand right next to the actual apron, which makes it interesting. Some people don't like that. There was someone who went to the shows with me who said, oh, I'm not too keen on this. And then as he saw the second and third nights of the tournament, he began to appreciate the atmosphere, how it was different because of the, you know, close nature of the fans to the ring. So the third match on this Inner Circle show, it was Marius Alani, who was a German guy, he's very good. He actually had an upset when he beat Jeff Cobb. Jeff Cobb, another guy that you may be familiar with and the listeners may be familiar with as well. Then the fourth match for Timothy Thatcher, who's a WXW kind of stalwart at the moment. He's a guy that's working a lot for the promotion. He's in a stable called Ringkampf with the champion at the time, Axel Dieter Jr. and Volta. They're a fantastic kind of straight-laced team that liked of sportsmanship all about that. But they're still heels at the end of the day, but they're kind of a tough team. You know, they're a really good stable. And he beat Timothy Thatcher, beat a guy called Francis Caspin, who was the academy guy on this show. So it was interesting. He got a shot. He was a guy who was all right. He didn't overly, like, wow me, but he had the fundamentals down and he held his own with Timothy Thatcher in the match, you know, held my attention. So at the end of the day, for a guy that's only been, not that many matches, he's totally fine. And the main event was a non-title match. David Starr's the champion, the Shotgun champion. The Shotgun's a TV show, so it's basically the TV champion in a way. And he beat Matt Riddle in the main event, as I said, and that was in about 15 minutes. So it was a really good show for me to get my taster of WXW in an intimate environment. So I really, really enjoyed that, JT.
Let me ask you, Alan, so 100 people go to these shows, so are they a very reliant company on, I know you mentioned Alan Forrell, there's English commentary, so they're very reliant on, putting up the either a DVD or a live stream or, a download of the show? Is that where they make most of their money off this?
Oh, well, this show was the 100 people. This was in their academy. It wasn't in their arena for the whole weekend, you see. So, yeah, this is just basically for – it was not a VIP show. I think anyone could get a ticket, but they kind of classed it as the big fans would come to this sort of show. Okay. So then we moved on. They had the actual 16-carat weekend itself at a place in Oberhausen. That's an area of Germany. It was I'm going to pronounce this probably incorrectly. I'm going to get shouted at. Turbinenhalle was the name of the arena. It's a place where big kind of heavy rock bands play, White Zombies and people like that when they tour, that kind of music. So it's kind of an industrial setting kind of place. It's quite a cool looking place when they've decked it out with all the WXW kind of big video screen that they had. They had a really good video screen. They have an art director that's involved with all this. They had pyro. They had really cool dry ice effects, not your kind of normal stuff coming down from the roof. It was a really good visual effect. Nice. So it was quite impressive. So the attendance of the first show was around 850, I would say. So it was a fairly good crowd. And there was just the tournament matches and a dark match. So the guys that were actually in the tournament, because I've not really got to this yet, we had Cody Rhodes. He's in the tournament. He went over in the first round against a guy called DeMack. DeMack, I don't know if you're aware of, JT. He worked the 205 tournament for WWE. Do you remember the Cruiserweight tournament? He was the German representative. He went out in the first round, but he was a little name value there for kind of some of the listeners who aren't aware of the promotion. Then we also had Mario Solani. He went over JT Dunn. Mario Solani is one of the tag team champions. He's in a team called A4. Really solid work. I really enjoyed him throughout the weekend, and he's a guy that I'm glad I'm aware of more, and hopefully I'm going to see him again in the future. He beat JT Dunn in the first round. JT Dunn is someone who's tagged with Chris Hero a lot in the past.
Yeah, I do know JT, and I saw him here in Rhode Island earlier this year.
I've not really seen him. Well, I've not seen him live before, and he didn't like wow me. Apart from a tag in a singles match, maybe on this match he was there to put the other guy over, so that was his role. So maybe I've been a bit harsh on him, but he didn't wow me in this really. So the next match we had was Timothy Thatcher. He beat Koji Kanemoto. Obviously, you'll have heard of Koji Kanemoto, former Tiger Mask, former great single star on his own as Koji. Getting on a bit in years now, JT. He's 50.
Oh, wow.
So he still aesthetically looks good, but this match with Timothy Thatcher wasn't too good really as well. Probably one of the weaker first round matches. I went into this cold on Timothy Thatcher. I did a complete 180 on him after this match. And he was a guy I've really kind of been quite hard on online. He's not really wowed me in Evolve over the, he's been the champion for the last, he was the champion for about a year or so, wasn't he, I think?
And,
it's someone that kind of the style I wasn't keen on. So in this match with Koji, it was quite sloppy in places. I don't think they were two guys that meshed well together, but he did his job. Koji was over with the crowd. People were aware of him. Not as much as I would have assumed, but talking to the promoter during the weekend, he brings some of these guys over because they've got relationships in Japan and it gets a bit more kudos in Japan, for future events, because there is guys they bring in from Japan throughout the year. They do have some working relationship now with New Japan as well, so there is some movement maybe there in the future. So the next match was a guy that really impressed me throughout the tournament. It's called Ilya Dragunov. He has a Russian communist Soviet gimmick. So he's basically, the sickle, the Russian kind of music comes out to, but
like
he's
my
really,
kind of guy, Alan.
Oh yeah, you would really be up your alley. He's really kind of hardworking, tough, stocky, not tall, guy by any means, about 5'10", 5'11". But, you know, he looks the part, and he looks quite mean-looking. And he beat a guy called Robert Drexler, the Avalanche. He was a bigger guy. He's been out injured for a year or so. So he's only been coming back this last year, this last few months. And it was a good outing by him. I like to see him. He's one of the big man workers. When I spoke to him, one of his favourite wrestlers growing up was Bam Bam Bigelow. And that's the guy he wants to pattern his style on. So I do like him. He's someone that's still, you know, getting better in the ring. But I think he had a good outing, so someone to look out for, the Avalanche. So the next one match on the first round was Matt Riddle defeated Donovan Dijak. Two guys that were brought in, two guys I were really looking forward to see because I've not seen them live before. Have you seen either of those guys live yourself?
Yeah, I've seen Dijak with Ring of Honor. I was supposed to see Riddle at a show here from like Bennett's promotion, that same one I saw JT Dunn, but he didn't show up. So they did a battle royal instead. He was actually supposed to fight Bennett in the battle royal, and it had been a lot of fun. But yes, I have seen Dijak for Ring of Honor.
My major complaint with Dijak over the last, say, 6 months to a year is he's been really getting really good. Mm-hmm. But I feel he doesn't work a big man style enough.
I would agree with that. Yeah, he does. He tries to do a lot of like flying stuff and act like he's not bigger than everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, in the environment he's in, he is a huge guy on the indie, so I think he should maybe use that a bit more. Here, he wasn't so bad. I didn't really have those complaints. The match against Matt Riddle, he was throwing Matt Riddle doing power moves on him. Matt Riddle was responding himself, doing his suplexes. Matt Riddle's a hell of a worker, got a hell of a charisma. You know, people have said this before, I'm not going to kind of harp on about it, but he's got something special about him in ring. And I just hope, you know, more and more people can see, you know, him. He's a very, very talented guy for someone that's only been, you know, working for, you know, 18 months maybe. I think then that he's a guy as well that has got potential to go a lot further in wrestling, but it's if he wants to or not, I think, is what it, you know, what it comes down to. But yeah, someone that if you've not seen him before, Matt Riddle, you really should. Next match, he was Bad Bones defeated Paul London. Paul London, obviously former tag team champion in WWE. But Bad Bones, John Killinger, he's a guy that's worked in TNA on and off. He was on TNA TV the other week, actually. He lost to Josh Barnett. I went in cold for Bad Bones in, you know, before this show as well. And another guy that really kind of, I did a 180 on, he was really worked hard. And this match with Paul London was really good. I sat with a number of German guys on the floor for this match. They really buried Bad Bones. They're not a big fan of his, really. But, you know, for me, really impressed me throughout the weekend. Paul London worked his absolute socks off. Really, really pleased, you know, to see him again. Because he's a guy maybe, some people may feel, have coasted on the indies a bit. You know, he's not been around on kind of high profile indies for a number of years, has he?
He's a guy that always seems to pop up name wise and then something happens, you know. There's always something that comes up, it feels like.
Something going on with Paul London, but yeah, really good throughout the weekend. But yeah, Bad Bones went over Paul London in the first round. And then we had Mike Bailey versus ACH. And I was really looking forward to this match. Really, really good. Two guys, I've seen ACH before live quite a few times, but Mike Bailey, not seen him live before. Someone as well that I kind of went in with preconceived notions about, wrongly, from kind of catching some of his stuff in PWG. I think he worked slightly slower style here against ACH. It wasn't bang, 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 bang. Oh, you know, as I'd expected. They did calm it down a little bit. The match did go about 15 minutes. It was the second longest match of the first round. Mike Bailey went over ACH, and I thought a little bit of an upset because ACH is a guy who, you know, is fantastic. He can do a lot of different things. Mike Bailey, I don't know, I'm not a fan of his as much as ACH, so I was hoping for ACH to go through, but Mike Bailey went through, and I had no problem with that after seeing, you know, this match. And then in the last match of the first round, we had Volta, who's part of Ring Camp with, as I said earlier, Timothy Thatcher and Axel Dieter Jr., who was the WXW champion. He went over David Starr, and I thought a bit of an upset. David Starr is a really, really good babyface, JT. Have you ever seen him?
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, he's fantastic. He's a former amateur wrestler. Didn't, you know, do NCAA or anything like that. He decided to try out pro wrestling. I think he tried to make All-American, and he lost his final match to do that, which he was quite disappointed about. And then one thing led to another. He turned pro, and then he wasn't eligible for stuff, and, you know, his amateur career was basically over. He's been involved in WXW for quite a while now. You're going to hear more and more of him. He's an American guy, as I said, because obviously he's got the amateur background credentials. But he's such a good babyface. so good babyface. He's the actual shotgun champion over in Germany for WXW, and he's over so much with the crowd. But this match with Walter was absolutely phenomenal. This really, really impressed me. This was probably my joint second favourite match of the entire weekend. Really, really good hard-hitting match. Lots of hope spots. David Starr played babyface in peril really well, because Walter's like this 300 pounds, 6 foot five, just massive guy, you know, just throws you around the ring, does some, you know, good amateur kind of suplexes, and, you know, really good wrestler, really, really good. I recommend anyone go out of the way to see Walter. But this was a really good match. But that kind of wrapped up the first round. So going through to the second round, we have Walter, Mike Bailey, Bad Bones, Matt Riddle, Dragunov, Timothy Thatcher, Alani, and Cody Rhodes. So quickly going through to the second round, we had a dark match. It was, not a non-tournament match, but Jeff Cobb over Dijak. Jeff Cobb, really good live, you know, someone to see live. Have you ever seen him before live, JT? Have you had the opportunity?
No, I don't think I've seen Jeff live. I have not.
Yeah, I really enjoyed him. You know, I've seen him as Matanza before. I've seen him a lot on the indies. And he didn't disappoint at all. So I was really pleased. A really good big man match, hoss match between Cobb and Dijak. So getting on to the tournament itself, Matt Riddle, Mike Bailey. It was a Matt Riddle, Mike Bailey match. You know, it was Matt Riddle doing suplexes, Mike Bailey strikes, Matt Riddle countering with strikes, you know, with kicks. Doesn't really stand out to me as anything that was wow, but right. Wasn't bad. Wasn't bad at all. Matt Riddle went over Mike Bailey, and that which I thought at this point they may give Matt Riddle the, you know, the full run in the tournament, but we'll see later on what happens. Then in the next quarterfinal, we had Dragunov, who, the story of this was he was his heel, but he was his heel that would never give up. He came from a tough background in the Soviet Union. That was the kind of whole thing. He came from tough background and he was taught never to give up. So it was a heel to a point, but he was more turning now because he's facing Timothy Thatcher, who is from Ringkampf, and he was more coming over with the fans. He was really, really well liked from the start because I think they've been building this for some time with him. But this was kind of his coming out kind of show. So he went over Timothy Thatcher of Ringkampf, which was you know, a big win for him because Ringkampf are the kind of main team stable in WXW. So it was a really good match. Then we had Walter over Alani, Marius Alani. Again, Walter really impressed me in this tournament. Marius and Alani, a German-based guy, a lot of people may not have heard of, as I said, was the tag team champion in the promotion. Really impressed me throughout this, but Walter pushed as one of the, you know, major favourites going in, you know, went over in this quarterfinal match. And then we had, in what I would say a major upset, Bad Bones defeats Cody Rhodes clean, which was, you know, a big upset because Cody Rhodes... Yeah.
He doesn't do a job for many guys right out there on the...
I don't think he's done a proper job yet. Yeah. This was his first job. So to lose on this show, you know, meant a lot. I thought, you know, he really, for him to give Bad Bones the kind of, you know, the rub, I thought that would really help Bad Bones moving forward, not just for this tournament, but throughout the next, you know, the coming year. So I think Cody Rhodes doing the honours there, you know, hats off to him. And then we had, you know, just some kind of prelim matches. Koji Kanemoto over Francis Caspin. That was his shot because he was... kind of this guy that's come from the academy. So it was his shot on the main show. As I said, all right. I think Koji Kanemoto worked better with him than he did against Timothy Thatcher. We had a four-way between David Starr, Absolute Andy, ACH, and Paul London. Great four-way, as you'd expect, between those four, or three of the four guys you may have heard of. Absolute Andy, one of the tag team champions. Really good wrestler. I really enjoy him. He has this chant, Absolute, and the fans chant Andy. He shouts Absolute. They shout Andy and so on. Really over with the fans, a German kind of favourite. Really enjoyed that match. David Starr, you know, won and kept the belt, the shotgun, the TV title. Then we had the Avalanche over JT Dunne in a five-minute match. It was kind of a bit of a squash match, to be fair. Cementing Avalanche as kind of a threat moving forward in the year. And then what we had is the main event, and this was a really good match. It was for the WXW Unified World title, and the champion is a guy called Axel Dieter Jr., who's the son of a kind of catch wrestling legend who passed away the other year, called Axel Dieter. He actually lost this. He lost the title to Jørn Simmons. Jørn Simmons is a guy I think a lot of people will really enjoy. Really good kind of big hoss wrestler. Looks a bit like a Viking in the way he's got the beard. He's got kind of blonde, crazy hair when it comes out of his ponytail. He's a Dutch guy, and his English is impeccable. He hasn't got an accent at all, so I think he could do really well in the US in the future, because he's someone, you know, that has kind of the support from the European fans.
How old is he, Alan?
Let's have a look. I don't think he's that old. Off the top of my head, I'm not too sure.
So he's just getting going versus like...
He's 25. Yeah, okay, yeah, so he's 25.
Plenty of legs left. Yeah,
that's... he's 260 pounds, 6 foot three. So yeah, he's a guy that's got the size, he's got look, he can talk. So yeah, he beat Axel Dieter for the title. This was a really good match, probably my third or fourth best match on the entire show, or sorry, the entire weekend. The match was quite a long one. It went about 25 minutes or so. And in the end, the pyro came off. It looked really impressive. There was smoke coming down from the roof, from the ceiling, sorry. And it was a really good visual, and it made... You know, this is a really important match and, you know, came across really well. So this match, like the whole tournament, which I haven't said yet, you can check it all out on, they've got their own on-demand service, JT, called WXW Now. And you can just Google that. And it's, I think it's €10 a month and they've got a hell of a lot of content on there. But this actual tournament as well is going to be on Flow Slam. They're going to show the tournament from the 17th of March till the 19th. Nice. So that's
just
in a few days.
For that now then, get in. Catch the old
yeah, so definitely worth it because I'm going to get onto why in the final show. So quickly going through now the final show. It was how many matches did we have on this? We had two semifinals and the final. So we'll quickly just talk about them because I know we're pushed for time. So in the semifinal match we had Dragunov, who, as I said, is this Russian guy. Soviet. Obviously, the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore, but a guy from the former Soviet Union. Beat Bad Bones in about 10 minutes, and it was showing his fire, his heart, his determination to win again, and the crowd again really pushing for him by this point, so really impressed me there. And then in the other semi-final, we had Walter beating Matt Riddle in a bit of an upset. Really good match. Matt Riddle, as I keep waxing lyrical, he's a really good indie wrestler, so he's definitely someone to check out. Excuse me. So what we get to now, after Volta beat Matt Riddle, is the actual final of the show. This was, honestly, JT, the best match I've ever seen live. Do you know what came on last time and I said it was the best match I'd ever seen live, the WWE tournament?
That's high praise.
Seriously, none of the listeners will have probably heard of these two guys. Honestly, 4¾-star match. It was absolutely amazing. Dragunov beat Walter in about 16 minutes, and it was the most brutal, just couldn't take your eyes off it match. And brutal, I don't mean that in the hardcore sense. I mean that in the brutality of the chops and just the stiffness of the match. You know, you big New Japan chop fests that they have, or forearm fests, or even, you know, we're talking kind of generalized terms, All Japan, New Japan, kind of stiff, you know, real strong style matches. And this was, wow, really, the brutality got to the point where it was like uncomfortable, but you couldn't take your eyes off it. But it showed that the heart and desire of Dragunov, because I kind of separated kayfabe from non-kayfabe here. The heart, he has to have the heart to do this regardless if he's selling it or not selling it, because there's no non-selling. His chest was a mess, you know, an absolute mess. So there's selling in its traditional sense goes out the window in this point. And it's a weird kind of thing to explain, JT, being there live, because you know it's uncomfortable. You want him to quit. You know that it's not a work, but it's in the confines of a work. If that makes sense. It's kind of, it was really odd. I've never experienced anything like it in a live environment before, because the fans were so behind Dragunov as a character. And I think as a person as well, separating the wrestler from the guy, this guy, they know, he's been around for a few years. You know, he's only 23. He is actually from Russia, but he's only a 23-year-old guy. He's been working for 4 years, but it's just the heart of this guy. Seriously, guys, I'm not going to, you know, say this again and just to bore you, but go out your way if you can. Somehow, some way, watch this match. Watch just this match. If you can't watch the whole show, either watch it on Flow Slam, either get it on the WXW network. But this is going to feature really highly in the end of year awards for a lot of people, I think, JT. And I don't want people to kind of miss out on it and think, wow, I didn't hear about this. I'm telling you now, just after the actual show itself, a couple of days removed, go and watch this. This will be on demand from, I think, tonight on the WXW thing, but from the 17th on Flow Slam. So super high praise from me. Absolutely super high praise.
awesome. Well, I mean, anytime you can see a match like that live is an incredible experience, especially at the, you know, culmination of this long weekend of wrestling that you're so involved with and so into, and then you cap it off with that. It's like, you know, it's hard to beat that experience.
Yeah, definitely. It was so, yeah, people go out the way to watch it. And I just, thanks for having me on and let me go through it. Is there anything else you want to go through about the actual show, JT?
Yeah, I want to do a real quick lightning round, like four questions here. Well, probably three, because we already know what your match of the weekend was. But, give me your second best match of the weekend behind that one.
Okay, it was a non-tournament match, the second favorite match of the weekend. It was the four-way that was... Oh, so it was a tag... Let me think which one it was, actually, now. I'm just trying to put myself on the spot. It was probably, though, it was a singles match. Walter David Starr, I would say, from the first night. David Starr, as I said, is such a good babyface. Walter is a real mean, kind of tough face, heel, and David Starr played the face of Pearl brilliantly. That match I would probably give 4.25, 4.5 to. So, again, a really good match to, you know, go out your way and see.
Awesome. Who do you think the top star in WXW is?
Well, I would say it would be the champion at the moment, Jern Simmons, or Ring Kampf as a stable. So Jern Simmons is a singles guy, Ring Kampf, who are Walter, Timothy Thatcher, and Axel Dieter Jr. So they're, I would say, arguably the main four guys overall.
Right, you've mentioned a couple, but any other unfamiliar workers that you didn't mention for us fans here to be on the lookout for?
Yeah, there was a no ropes match on the show, which is really interesting. I've never seen a no ropes match before, either live or even, you know, on tape, apart from maybe Akebono versus Big Show, you know, but that was more of a sumo match. So, yeah, it was a no ropes match. So it was basically they were just in the ring, and then they could just, you know, it was falls count anywhere in a way. It was a guy called Alpha Kevin, and he beat Marius van Beethoven. And this was a match that was built up over a number of months now. And they showed a kind of good video package to the live crowd, which they'll probably show on the VOD release as well, just building up to it. And there was people involved like Alpha Female. Alpha Female's a girl that's a woman, sorry, a female wrestler who's been doing some shoot fight stuff in Japan recently as well. So she's got a bit of a name out there. She was worked for TNA and other promotions, and she was involved in kind of the build-up to this. But the blow-off match was Alpha Kevin beating Marius van Beethoven, and that was kind of quite a brutal, not to a point, you know, overly brutal. There were just some cane shots. There was, you know, table involved. The finish was a package pile driver from the apron to the outside. So it was, you know, going to that side of, you know, wrestling that some people may not like, but I thought as a live thing, it was absolutely brilliant. I had a hoot watching it. So that was a match that maybe you, two guys as well you've not heard of, Alpha Kevin and Marius van Beethoven, want to check out.
Awesome. All right, he's Alan Blackstock, and he's our European consultant, our correspondent here on Clotheslines and Headlines. Been a long day. We're gonna go ahead. We're gonna take a break. I want to thank Alan for joining us. We'll have him back anytime. It's a major show across the pond to come on and break down. So thanks for joining us, Alan. Always great to chat with you. We'll take a break. We will be back. We're going to be talking some Shikara. Of course, Glenn Butler was at the shows recently in New England. We're going to talk about all about live experience on this episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. That's what we're all about here at Place to Be Nation. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be back talking some Shikara.
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines, where we like to talk about a cavalcade of different wrestling styles and promotions and rosters. And now is our segment where we are going to talk about Chikara Pro Wrestling, the fun-filled Super Lucha Party Now, Steve, the last time we talked about Chikara, we did an extensive primer on the Season 17, Season 18 kind of parallel storytelling that's going on. Since then, there's been one Hour of Power episode of Season 18 and a couple of live shows, one of which I went to, and we'll talk about that a little later, and three new episodes of Season 17 that have gone up. So, what do you think about the way that that's kind of developed since then? Do you think they have maintained the interest that, like, the introduction of that gimmick kind of introduced?
It's maintained my interest in terms of the parallel storylines going on. I really like seeing something develop in Season 18 and wonder, ooh, how is this gonna, where did this come from? How was this brought up in Season 17? Is this a continuation of something we already saw, or is there something brand new that's going to happen? And it is very enjoyable to me to see that from a story setup. More of it parallels the shows that I like to watch, like a Lost or even a new show a lot of us on Place to Be Nation like This Is Us. You have these multiple storylines from different timelines going on that intertwine at some point. So from that aspect, I really enjoy it. What I've been a little disappointed in, and I think I talked about last time, is with such a roster turnover, you have a lot of really young wrestlers in the ring with little experience. And so to have to push some of those into major storylines is a challenge. And, you know, luckily some of the veterans, like your Silver Ants, your Fire Ants, your Ophidians, your Ultramantis Black returning, have helped with that. But there's a lot of improvement that needs to happen.
There really is, because they have introduced a lot of people, and there are people who are introduced brand new in Season 18, and there are people who we saw for the first time in Season 18, but then you go back and they actually debuted in Season 17. So there's that parallel there, too, with some people who are still a little green, but in the episodes that we're still getting from Season 17, they're even greener. So that's something that you're going to see developing. The way that they introduced the parallel storytelling gimmick was, like we discussed, when Ultramantis Black revealed that suddenly he was the Grand Champion. And there was a whole season to tell us how he became Grand Champion. But one of the things that we were wondering also was what happened to the Campeonatos de Parejas, the tag titles of Chikara, which had been on Mustache Mountain, who are now, of course, working for the WWE. And so there's a little bit of uncertainty, or there was, as to what happened there. And that's one point where I feel the parallel storytelling kind of faltered a little bit, because I want to know the reaction that you had when you saw the announcement that Cornelius Crummles and Sonny DeFarge were going to be defending the Campeonatos that they had already won at some point at their swing through New England. What was your reaction?
I think my reaction may have been similar to what Chikara's reaction was, because when Ultramantis Black, the reveal happened on a show, like on the video that we saw, like live. It was a live show, and everyone kind of gasped, like, whoa, what just happened? And the announcement of the Campeonatos de Parejas was kind of buried in the cards for the weekend that were coming up that said, you know, DeFarge and Crummles will defend their tag titles versus who did they? The Force, I believe.
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of a, okay. Because the first time I saw them was the season finale of Season 16. It wasn't like that they were that new at that. They were pretty new at that point. So not exactly my first choice. I don't even know if it'll be interesting. Like, are they just going to come back for one match, Mustache Mountain? Because we still have not seen this.
Right. I mean, this must have happened at some point in season 17, but we have not seen it in the episodes that have been revealed thus far. And so time's ticking to show that happen.
Right. They already have the points needed to challenge for the title. They called them out on the fifth show when they had the points, and they won again after that. So I think they have 4 points at this junction. And yeah, and it what's intriguing to me is that the guys from Mustache Mountain are still wrestling for shows in England. And I don't know if that's just part of their contract or that they can still do that and wrestle in their home promotions. Does that mean, you know, we might get something at WrestleMania weekend where there's a rematch of some sort? Will they work together? I don't know how this is going to happen. Are they just going to have to give up the championships because they're not going to be in the show, or will we see an actual match?
I really don't know. I'm the sort of wrestling fan who heard that, you know, they were in the WWE tournament and thought, you know, well, are they going to have a match where they come back and lose the Campeonatos? And when they revealed that season 17 had happened, I looked through the available results for Tyler Bate and Trent Seven to see if they had made any other appearances in the U.S. Because I assume if they flew over to lose the Campeonatos on a Chikara taping for the secret season, they're not going to fly over from England and do one show. So I thought maybe they would do other indies, maybe in the Northeast and whatever other areas they could get to try to, you know, finance the trip a little better, and found nothing.
Uh-oh.
So I don't know how that's going to work itself out, but I can tell you that the opinion that I've had of Crummles and DeFarge since I first saw them last fall was such that when I heard that they were defending the titles, there was a groan that emanated from my household. And I've been going really negative on a lot of things on this episode, so...
It's unlike you.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it's a little more like me offline.
Ah, gotcha.
But I try to keep it reined in. I try, Steve. I don't want to go too much more into depth on that, but I can say one note from the live performance that I saw in Enfield, Connecticut a couple of weeks ago is that they're much better live. You know, people talk about how the live experience kind of makes anything feel better, but and maybe it's just that they've been working a little more and they're a little more polished now, but they were much better live in the 8-person tag that I saw than they were on a lot of the older taped shows. So maybe there's promise.
And that is always, you know, as we talk about Chikara, it is a live experience. It is much better. Well, just like any wrestling and any music, anything really is better to see it live. But Chikara especially, like, you get sucked into the entire experience. So you can excuse some maybe younger wrestlers or, you know, silly things happening because you're wrapped up in the fun of it all.
Yeah, definitely. That was one of the highlights for me at the show that I went to, actually, because Chikara is a very family-friendly promotion, and so there were a lot of kids there, and especially in my section. And during the main event, the grand championship match between Ultramantis Black and Max Smashmaster, they did several dives into the section, like, right in front of me. Like, I was literally getting out of the way before they smashed into the first few rows of chairs. And some of the children in my section started getting a little scared. And it was really cute. There was one little boy in the first row whose father or whoever it was who had brought him kind of told him to go stand by the corner of the ring just in case they leapt, you know, off of the middle of the apron into our section again. And then a few minutes later, they did. And then after that, the little boy did not want to come back. He just stood at the end of the row of seats for the rest of the match.
Yeah, I could see some kids being scared of that. Was there anything that advanced in terms of what we saw in season 17 is Fire Ant, I can get them confused all the time. Is it Obi Aaron that's the remaining member of the B'Tiri? and Ophidian, they kind of have been coming together to form a little group to stop whatever invaders might come in from to try to take over Chakar in the future, because all of them have lost partners.
Yeah, that was interesting. They're forming kind of like the Avengers.
Yeah,
you know, to try to repel any other invaders of Chakara, which are not in evidence thus far. Fire Ant was the only one of those three who wrestled on the Connecticut show. He had a match against Murloc, which was actually a pretty good match. They did their like mini Sting Vader, where Fire Ant had his comebacks and all of his kind of high-flying offense, and Murloc just kept coming and kept coming and overwhelmed him and absorbed all of his offense until finally he won, which was pretty well done, especially considering some of the last couple of Murloc performances. And so I didn't see Oberyn at the show, and Ophidian was there. He was selling merchandise before the show, and he was seen a couple of times. I think he might have been like managing the show a little bit, but he didn't wrestle. So that storyline wasn't really in evidence. I think the only storyline development that I saw was in the ongoing story of Juke Joint Lucas Calhoun and whether or not he can still do karate. because he had a match against Juan Francisco de Coronado, who I believe I said last time is quickly rising in esteem, in my opinion. And
oh, absolutely agree. Yep.
Yeah, and had another solid win to get a third point. So Juan Francisco can now get into title contention, and after what I've seen the last few months, Juan Francisco versus Ultra Mantis is definitely a match that I would want to see.
Yeah, and we should probably mention, too, with WrestleMania weekend coming up, they have announced a couple of matches going forward. And some of them, they're taking advantage of all the people who have been in town. So, and I'm just calling it up as we're talking. The big kind of surprise, I would say, in terms of, I'm assuming this won't be a title match. It will be Ultra Mantis Black against Grado from Impact and England fame. I think it was ICW that I think that he was in England, and I know Chad will correct me on that one too, so bring it on. And also Chuck Taylor and Dustin, the former Chuck Taylor, my favorite tag team in the world, will go up against Crummles and Defarge. So maybe you'll see something change that weekend.
Possibly. And, yeah, I think I did see on Twitter Chuck Taylor TM announced with great hoopla that he is going to WrestleMania weekend.
And we do have Ultra Mantis Black versus Juan Francisco de Coronado on day two.
Oh, so, awesome.
That will probably be your title match. And then Max Smashmaster in a total conflict of styles against the returning Zack Sabre Jr. And big shout out for Zack Sabre for, despite having such a huge star drawing power now, continuing to come back to Chikara to do matches. A lot of people don't do that, but he seems to be one who will continue it in the future, and I'm very happy to see that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And Max Smashmaster is an interesting case. What have you made thus far from the shows you've seen of the Max Smashmaster singles push?
Okay. My disappointment has been more that his partners from Devastation Corporation have not been able to, you know, as of what I just said positively about Zack Sabre, they've been in Evolve and doing some other organizations, and I wish that they could still wrestle in Chikara, and I don't know what the deal is there, because they are different. They are a little more athletic, I should say, than Max Smashmaster. Max Smashmaster has been the big bully. He's generally taking on women who are smaller than him and other people that are smaller than him. And then he's been getting this big push. And on one hand, the physical attributes and some of the stuff that he does doesn't make me excited. However, when you combine him with Sydney Bacabella and some of his mannerisms in terms of, you know, being that bully character, that monster, it's a little more appealing. So if he can get it all together, I think he'll be okay. It's not my cup of tea right now. That being said, I always like contrast of styles matches. I think it's probably really fun for the wrestlers to work something out to make it look good. So I am looking forward to that match. And Zack Sabre is arguably the best wrestler in the world right now. So,
yeah, that is a match that I didn't think too much of when it was first announced. But after seeing the Enfield show a couple of weeks ago, which was, like I said, main evented by Max Smashmaster challenging Ultra Mantis Black for the grand title, I'm thinking a little more highly of Smashmaster these days, because that big versus little dynamic is something that is very easy to do, and it's easy to do well, and a lot of people do it well. And I'm not really used to thinking of Ultra Mantis Black as the small man in a match, but against Smashmaster, he definitely was, and they really played off of that dynamic in... my immediate reaction, I think, after the show was that that was far and away the best Smashmaster match I've ever seen. And so that has me thinking a little better of it. And at this point, I would genuinely like to see what Zack Sabre can do with him.
Yeah, I'm intrigued as well. I hope those hop up on Chikaratopia pretty quickly. I'm waiting to see the shows that you're at. They're not yet up. We have an Hour of Power that will be on the 19th. So that will be the weekend after we are taping this show. So I'm kind of excited because it's been a lull since for the last couple of weeks. There hasn't been really anything new to watch. So I'm catching up on some other things right now, but I'm excited to see where the stories go. And that's my main love of Chikara, is the silliness and the storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely. And no matter what else is happening and no matter how the roster is moving, they are still supplying both of those in ample quantity.
Absolutely.
On that note, I think we will call it a night and beat a hasty retreat here. Thank you, listeners, very much for listening to this episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. Brother Nate, are you still
with
us?
Hey, wait. What's going on, guys? I was hanging out, and all of a sudden, I feel like I've traveled through time, and for some reason, I've got this championship belt that I don't know how I won it and who I won it from, but I'm glad to be here, I guess.
The most important question, Nate, can you do karate?
I don't know karate, but I know crazy.
All right. For Nate, for Steve, I am Glenn, thanking you again and saying... we'll see you next time.
Somebody call Claire Lynch. I'm worried about her.
Get Daniels back on the line.
Take me away. I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back.